Hey, Jim?
Ready.
Okay. Okay, well, this is the second tape of our October 3rd session here, and Bob had just asked Mr. Harrell a question, so officially our tape will begin with you responding to his question, Mr. Harrell.
Well, I'm not sure that I know the answer to that, but I, as far as I know, that was the first candlelighting ceremony built around a campfire, and with the club members taking part in that. I suppose that it was my idea. I don't like to claim too many of them, but as far as I know, that's the way it happened. And I would tell Bob, if he has the time, that he might go over into the archives and dig out a tape. There is a taped program of that candlelighting ceremony when we used to conduct it here on Old Riddick Stadium, where you found such a hard time trying to find a place to park your car a while ago. But this was set up with a campfire in the center, and around that, on the four corners of that campfire would be your four incoming state officers and your four present state officers. And the club members, a thousand or more of them, the boys in their white uniforms and the girls in their green uniforms, the girls formed the perimeter or the limb of the four-leaf clover in the green. And the boys in their white, at that time we had quite a large number of girls in the 4-H club week than they did have boys, but we did have enough in the white to make the H's and the stem of the clover. And in that formation, with the candles lighted, we completed the installation of the new officers. And Merle, since we answered this question, whispered to me, since you asked me to lead the Follow the Gleam up at that microphone, said that's the first time I ever led a song, but said I studied music and went on and did pretty well later on. But to my knowledge, that is the only type of installation ceremony used in any of the states. We used a little bit like that with the club members in the background at camp, certain ceremonies. But the idea grew out of the empty space up here and my experience with campfires in camp.
When did you start that ceremony, Mr.?
Well, I would say in the early 20s. Maybe there's someone here who attended that first one. Did you attend one of them, Mary Emma?
Not in the 20s, yes.
It really started in the 20s. I would say maybe 27 or 28, because this Mary Emma attended National Camp in 1930, and if she attended one of those, it must have been about 28. So it would be somewhere around 27 or 28. See, I came to the state college as state leader in 26.
Where did the song Follow the Gleam come from? Was that written especially for this?
No, Follow the Gleam is older than several of us put together here. But we had the candlelight, and the idea was there that we wanted these club members here to, and as stated in the ceremony, that they will take this light back to their respective counties. Each club member was holding a candle, and the central fire there was supposed to reflect the spirit and the image of 4-H, and they were supposed to follow that gleam or to carry that back to their counties. It just happened to fit.
And apparently still fits today, right, Bob?
Yes,
as much
certainly.
As ever. Mary Emma Butts and Margaret Clark have joined us now. We said a while ago that they would. Mrs. Butts is originally from Turkey, North Carolina, and of course her husband was Secretary of Agriculture for a lot of years, and Margaret Clark is now sort of enjoying the same kind of status as Lyman does as a 4-H specialist emeritus. And Margaret, when you weren't here, Mr. Harrell had some interesting definitions of retirement. I'll wait till later and let him tell you again. I don't know if that applies to Margaret or not. Mr. Harrell is saying, no, lay off that. Mary Emma, you answered Mr. Harrell a moment ago about remembering that installation ceremony. What are some of the other recollections of 4-H that you have as a member?
Well, of course, I remember going to camps at White Lake and coming to the 4-H short course here at State College, which were always very thrilling and inspiring.
What were some of the things that you studied, I guess studied is the right word, at the 4-H?
Foods and canning and room improvement and sewing and many things like that. But as I look back over 50 years, it seems to me that as interesting and as good as these projects were, this was not the main thing. I think the main thing was the working with the young people, training them in leadership and in expressing themselves, in organizing, and I guess you would say to be good citizens.
What were some of your interests in 4-H down in, not Duplin, but
Sampson County?
What were some of your involvements there as a schoolgirl?
Well, as I said a while ago, one was room improvement.
Uh-huh. Was this a project in itself?
This was a project in itself in which I redecorated my room, did it all, painted the furniture and made the draperies and painted the walls and did all of these things.
So
planned them under the supervision of Mrs. Stella Cusick, who lives here in Raleigh now. She was my county home demonstration agent. And I won a prize on this. I can't remember exactly what it was. And then, of course, we took our best products, our canned products, to the county fair. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they went to the state fair. And, we not only did our canning and our foods, but we studied nutrition, how to make a balanced meal, and clothing, sewing. But I think even more important than the mechanics of sewing, it was how to dress appropriately and to be well-groomed and as attractive as possible and that sort of thing. But really, as I go back on it, these were important, but these were not the most important thing.
Well, I think the things that you have pointed out as being important probably do come about as a result of this, though.
I think so.
I think it was a great foundation. And Mr. Harrell, how do you explain the fact that youngsters 10 and 11 and 12 years old could get interested in decorating their room? I can't even get my kids to pick up their dirty socks these days. How do you explain that kind of interest?
Well, most of our boys back in that day, they didn't have any socks, so they had to do something else.
Well, they didn't decorate rooms.
I think that comes back to one of the fundamentals in 4-H. It was the influence of that club member's leader.
That's right.
That club member. Now, incidentally, this agent who supervised her project in room improvement is now one of the better interior decorators in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And so some of what she gave to Mary Emma helped Mary Emma to do this room improvement project. I think it can be summed up, and I'm breaking a little here, in a statement that a club girl put in a letter after she had been awarded a 4-H scholarship. She said, "I hope, my greatest hope is that 4-H is better because it passed through me." Now, what Mary Emma has said, that the most important thing in 4-H, as far as Mary Emma was concerned, was not that room, but the fact that it helped to put her in a position of leadership where she could help other people, specifically boys and girls, to do a better job in 4-H. And she didn't tell you one thing. Somewhere else, I'm going to tell you this. She met the man who has meant more to her than any other man in her life when she went to National 4-H Camp as a delegate from North Carolina in 1930 and met this 4-H boy from Indiana who was a delegate there, and later on they married and they have a wonderful family and have made a wonderful contribution to agriculture not only here but throughout the nation because of their image.
What was Earl Butz's interest in 4-H?
He was
he was a pig club leader, and I believe lambs, and his was mostly in the livestock area.
Well, when you folks were at Purdue University, because your husband was also dean of the School of Agriculture,
that's right,
there, I suppose that 4-H, just as it would be on this campus here that we're on today, was very important out there, too, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, indeed. We've been in it all of our lives, really. because we took a great interest in the Extension Service, the 4-H, while we were on campus at Purdue, and then, of course, in Washington as secretary. When we were invited to do something with Extension or 4-H, why, we certainly made an extra special effort to.
Well, I hope you will congratulate the secretary on the fact that he has finally arrived, reached the ultimate in one's career now that he has become a syndicated broadcaster. I don't know if everybody in this room knows that or not, but Mr. Butts does have a program that's going to be going out all over the country, and I have an idea that he might talk about 4-H occasionally on that program.
He just may do that. I think I'll tell him to.
We'll challenge him to do that, all right? Margaret Clark was involved in 4-H for a lot of years. Margaret, let's start back. Were you a 4-H member as a young girl?
I thought as Mary Emma made her remarks, the first 4-H club meeting I can remember was under the supervision of Mrs. Stella Cusick. Miss Stella Reimer came to our old wooden school building down at Clarkton in Bladen County and gave a demonstration on making biscuit. Well, can I remember that time? She brought an old oil stove and an oven. And while I can remember at that old wooden building, I can remember watching Mr. George Craven, one of our earliest county agents. He would come across, he lived next to the school building, and he would come across and feed pigs, the prettiest, sleekest, reddest pigs I'd ever seen. Well, when we'd go back home, we'd pick up the slop bucket from the kitchen, you know,
right,
and go out and feed the pigs. And I watched Mr. Craven and Miss Reimer, who later became Miss Stella R. Cusick, her home demonstration agent over in Sampson. She stayed with us 1 year, I think. I thought I would like to do something like they're doing. And I thought to help humanity, help people just live a little better. And I finished college in home economics and went into the home economics field in a rural area in Sampson County. I found out that Turkey wasn't over yonder across the sea when I went down to Sampson. I watched people like Ms. Lily Hester down home in Bladen and Ms. Stella R. Cusick, and I thought, someday I would like to be an extension agent. So I taught 6 years, and Miss Stella R. Cusick came back into my life. She called me, and she said, would you like to be a county home supervisor in our rural resettlement, which is now Farm Home Administration? I said, but I want to be an extension agent. So up I came one day in August and had the interview. And where did Miss Stella R. Cusick send me? Down to Trenton in Jones County, where Mary Emma Powell was home agent. And I watched her, I watched Mary Emma, and I thought, I believe she's much more happy in her work than I. And someday I want to be that extension worker. So Ms. Estelle T. Smith, a district agent, Mary Emma's district agent, called me one day and she said, would you like to be home agent in Carteret County? Oh, that was my dream. But I'd like to say, I started into extension work in 1936 in Carteret County in Beaufort. But may I say this, because I may forget to tell Mary Emma this, and I would like for everyone to know that we do admire those who lead us, and we are examples. Mary Emma asked me to go to 4-H camp with her one day. 4-H camp I went. Well, I'd been to camp, but I'd never been as in charge of a group of youngsters like that. Mary Emma had the best time. Donut, little choo-choo train. She would have them picking chickens. You remember how we used to pick chickens, Mr. Harrell?
We had to take one. When I went to 4-H,
we had to take chickens. Well, I learned all those songs from Mr. Harrell.
Yes. And I thought when Mr. Harrell invited me in 1942, and I'm jumping up years, he said, anyway, when he invited me to come to the State 4-H Club office the last time, And he said, Margaret, you better go because you know how old you are. I came. And I thought, oh, what will I do when I go to Chicago? And Lyman will have 60 or more boys and girls. I looked back to what I'd learned from Mary Emma Powell at camp. Mary Emma Powell never one time doubted that she could be the leader. And this is one of the big things that a co-worker taught me before I went into the extension work in 36.
Well, Margaret, you must be a happy person because you said your goal was to help other people and to make them better, and you have really achieved that. I want you to know that I think everybody would agree on that that phase, that you have really reached your goal when it comes to helping other people.
Thank you.
Mr. Harrell, what about these folks like this who sort of aspire from the time they are 4-H members to do this thing and just keep right on at it? Wouldn't you say that perseverance is one of the things that 4-H teaches?
Well, I think that Margaret and Mary Emma have, and Lyman, they have pretty well said that without that inspiration, and that goes back to 4-H. I've always had a feeling and tried to get across to other people, and I still do today. If you believe you can, you can. And the leadership isn't made. It's inherited from someplace, either perhaps beginning with a power that is greater than our own. But when you talk with Lyman this morning, you talk with Margaret, you talk with Mary Emma Powell, and you talk with Merle and with Barry Miller. But it just so happens that five of this group, counting LR, six of this group, were extension workers at one time or another. And there isn't any one thing that gives me any more satisfaction than the satisfaction that the people who staffed the 4-H office during my tenure as state leader, the way that they have followed through and the way that they have lived what they believe about 4-H, that is the answer to most of the questions that you've asked. Dedicated, devoted leadership.
Barry, I suppose you and I are sort of the outsiders when we talk about the extension, but...
Let me say one other thing about that now. I don't mean to limit that to paid workers. The unpaid worker deserves more credit than the paid worker. Now, Mrs. Graham, I wish she could hear this. She is a typical example of a grandmother of 4-H and a mother of 4-H. And she was a club member. But she did far more for 4-H after she moved over into the area of leadership than she ever did while she was active in the program. So when I referred to these people because they were members of the 4-H staff. And I had a part, a pretty big part, incidentally, in bringing them into the 4-H office.
By the way, Mrs. Graham had to leave to make a meeting this year.
That's right.
This afternoon.
That's
before
right.
We finish this recording session. The point I was going to make here with Dr. Miller, Mr. Harrell, was that leadership, I think, was an important part of my 4-H, too, in that I learned so much about it. For example, I never knew anything about what you might call the Roberts Rules of Orders or anything else. So presiding in a regular 4-H meeting taught me some things, Barry, that I still use today in civic club meetings, church meetings, and things like that. In other words, just the normal parliamentary procedure rules. I think the first time I ever encountered them was in 4-H. I'm not sure about you.
Yes.
Sometime or other.
Yeah, my first encounter would have been 4-H.
You talked about Swannanoa earlier in our program when we were talking about recreational camps. And then Margaret and Mary Emma talked a little bit about camping and that. Did you have to take a chicken when you went to camp?
No, I didn't have to
take a chicken. Why did I have to take a chicken, Miss Harrell?
Because you were an old man. up until we built Millstone 4-H camp, that was the first camp in North Carolina where we provided the food for the 4-H members. And in the beginning of Millstone camp, you brought your chicken, you brought your corn, you brought your sugar, you brought your rice, and the rice and the sugar sometimes got mixed up. But we brought our food. But as I recall, the first year that we provided the food, we paid the cooks. And you can answer this one as you are an agent. But as I recall, we charged the club members from Monday morning until Saturday, $1.50, and that took care of the cooks, the food, and the camp rental. Wasn't that what we paid? $1.50 a person. And that was the first camp in North Carolina where the food was provided by the camp. And of course, you wouldn't think of doing anything other than that now. And rather than cost you $1.50 a week, it'll cost you about $2.50 a day now, or maybe more.
Well, of course, how would you evaluate the camping program in 4-H?
Well, I think the 4-H camp program taught perhaps as much. Well, I think it was one of the big influences in the development of the 4-H program in North Carolina. I wouldn't put anything ahead of the 4-H camp. It, you know, your 4-H program must be a total program, and it must be a program if it is reaches its ultimate goal, a program that helps a youngster to find himself and to find his place in life where he feels that he can make the greatest contribution. It might be in medicine, it might be in extension, it might be in religion, and we have a lot of ministers in North Carolina today who will tell you that 4-H helped to influence them into the ministry. So the biggest thing of 4-H, as has been said here all around the table, is not the project, but the biggest thing and the ultimate goal, I think, of the leadership in 4-H should be to provide a program that will enable young people to find the area they are best able to serve and fit themselves to do that job. Now, you can't fail with that kind of a program.
I agree with that. I think the project is a means to an end, though.
Right, sure it is. That's ownership. You've got to have ownership, I think, before you can have true leadership. And you've got to have ownership, leadership, and citizenship, and I'll coin a new word, followership.
Very good. Followship.
Followership.
Okay.
You've got to be able to follow as well as to lead.
Mary Emma, you have, maybe this is putting you on the spot a little bit, but I don't think you mind being a native of North Carolina, but you've been able to see 4-H in a lot of states, and you were involved in this one more strongly than the other state. I'm sure maybe you've been an observer in other states. Do we have an advantage in North Carolina from having had one of the first 4-H organizations of any state in the Union and the leadership of Mr. Harrell and so forth?
I think so. It's a matter of great pride that we did have it early. And Mr. Harrell, of course, was Mr. 4-H for many years and still is in the state of North Carolina. And I think many other people have looked to this state for examples.
We've some former agents who have discussed things now that they can look back on them in retirement or for various other reasons moving out. But Dr. Merle Swisgood is still involved. Merle, what do you see in the future for 4-H? We've done a lot of reminiscing here today, but I think we ought to look ahead some, too.
I see it still as an opportunity for learning, learning about doing things and learning about yourself and learning about people. I think the world is hungry for meaning, Wally, and many young people in North Carolina have found personal meaning for their lives through 4-H, and I see no less demand in the future.
How would you suggest that we maintain the interest? We talked about change earlier here, changing times. And you yourself, I think, said something about the fact that a 10-year-old today is much more sophisticated, worldly, knowledgeable, and so forth than when we were 10 years old. So what do you do to interest youngsters today?
Our greatest resource is that of our leaders. And through our leaders, the extension agent finds his efforts multiplied over and over. We have a very fine leader training program through 4-H, and I think this is going to continue to be important. The leaders that have been developed in the extension service have served not only extension, but they have served in many other areas in their community, and I think this is an important asset. It is a challenge to keep young people busy. They have been spectators to life. Many of them have been reared by television, and by other people who maybe have not been as caring as we were so fortunate to have had a background that involved many caring people. It's a challenge, but these young people are just as anxious to be somebody, to find a place in life, and to make a difference through what they do as any young person has ever been. And I believe that if we go to camp today, and I try to go every year to camp and to Club Congress, we find that they are wanting to learn to do things, and they are interested in knowing more about the world in which they live, and they want to be a participator and not just a spectator.
You know, in the same line, a minute ago when Mary Emma and Margaret were talking about some of the involvements in their early stages as agents in the county, we were talking about cooking and sewing and home decorating and applying those in a way so that the girls would have those projects, the boys would be pigs, cattle, and so forth as their projects. Margaret, what about the modern person of today when we... Now, see, there I am saying the word person. You see, that sums it up. We are tending to think that there is no such thing as a girl's job or a boy's job or a girl's interest or a boy's interest. Is 4-H going to become an organization where there is no longer girls' projects and boys' projects?
Hasn't it come to that now? I was hoping that you would mention change. And as I look back over my 4-H extension agent's work and 4-H involvement from the state level, I think Lyman Dixon of 1962, when Mr. Harrell looked across the table and said, "Lyman, will you and Margaret take the leadership in this 4-H community development program?" This doesn't mean you'll do the work, because Lyman and I did a little thinking and all the others did the work. Mr. Harrell, that was hard. Yeah. They were most difficult days, weren't they, Lyman?
They really were.
Day and night. And there were many nights that I stayed awake and Mr. Harrell didn't know it. But at first, I had to be sold. But Dr. Ed Boone, in taking his course on programming, he said, for us to be a success, we must accept change. And I think this is one of the greatest things. At the time, many, many people couldn't see it. And many times I went home and I wept because an extension agent back in the county had said something real hurtful and wasn't that weak in me to do that. But for us to change from the school to the community level, I think it's one of the greatest achievements that our 4-H club has made in an organizational way. As I look back, and I don't want to get into ER...
A.
But isn't it terrible, I say to myself, that for so long a little girl was deprived of a pig if she couldn't carry a pig project. And look at the men who are interior decorators now. Well, even when I was teaching back down in Sampson, one of my boys who took home economics, and I had two in that class, went to sea, and he was the cook. So why couldn't he take nutrition? So I guess I'm saying, let the boy select a girl, select the project that best fits into his life.
That's very well put, Margaret. 4-H then has changed to meet the needs and the times, I think, is a summary of this. Well, Lyman, what would you say would be the next change? We can go back to what Margaret just described, 1962. When there was a tremendous change in the organizational concept of 4-H when it came out of the schools into the community. Is it going to stay right where it is forever organizationally, mm-hmm. or is there going to be some change somewhere down the line that somebody like me can't see?
Well, I don't have a crystal ball, but I believe there'll continue to be change. I think we'll probably have a greater clientele, audience in the cities. Of course, we already moved into the cities, Barry, but I think we're going to move farther into the city because there are youngsters there that need and would like to have an opportunity to go through this 4-H experience as much as any rural youngster. And, of course, as our farming and agricultural
programs change, and they have changed tremendously over the past, then we have less boys and girls directly connected with living on the farm or being a part of a family farm in agriculture. So, yes, I think it's going to change some more, but I hope it'll always keep the basic fundamentals of learning to do by doing, whatever the project may be or whatever the activity may be. If we can keep those basic things, learning to do by doing, and as just an example, then we'll still be strong. 4-H will still be strong, and will have a great meaning to anyone involved in it.
Would you change 4-H, Mr. Harrell? Would you do it differently if you had it to do over again?
Well, of course, that isn't a fair question, because sure, there are certain things with the experience, 50 years experience in the program. Naturally, there are things that you would do different if you started now. But if you started, if you had started 50 years ago with the program we have today, you would have pushed more people out of it than you would have brought in. Your program must be, whether it's today, tomorrow, or in the next generation, if it is successful, it must be based on the needs of the people and within their ability to do. I would change it to that extent.
We have about 5 minutes. I'm going to give you all of these if you want them, mm-hmm. to sum up, to comment on any of your pupils that are in here today, or anything else, anything that they have said that jogs your memory or would cause you to comment that I haven't given you a chance to say. Now is the time.
Well, I think you've given me too much time already, and here's Barry Miller from Charlotte and Mary Emma from everywhere. I think that they should give some more of their experiences rather than you'll have a chance at me again sometime, I hope, before we finish this. And I want to express appreciation to you for helping us do this. And when this is put down in paper, I want to sit down with you and help you to edit this to go into this history that we are going to make out of this. You know, we have two histories, one already on 4-H for 50 years. And I'm working on re-editing that. And, of course, we're going to bring a lot of this into it. But I don't know anything that I could add that would be more valuable than what you've heard from these people here around the table. And certainly, I feel so unworthy of the things that they've said about me that I hesitate to say anything.
Oh, well, everything they've said about you has been true, so, you know, you can forget all that stuff. And I don't want to keep anybody from saying anything in summary, so to speak, here today.
Well, I'd like to follow up on what Lyman had to say. Well, one of the pleasures I've had the last 6 or 8 years is I've had the pleasure of being a merit badge counselor for scouting interest in farming. And we've had a number of Eagle Scouts that I have one particular lad that I have in mind that had to go across the county line to do it. But he simply registers with the extension agent for his merit badge project. This lad had a corn project the year that Blythe hit the state, which was, 5 or 6 years ago. And he got interested in the virus. It changed the total course of his life. But the art of living that comes with these youngsters being able to go out and work with the rural people and farming and growing, this is an example of where 4-H can change and meet the needs. And we found this a very, very exciting program in Mecklenburg County.
Excellent. Anybody else?
I'm glad to hear what he said, the art of living. You remember when we used to come down there on every Saturday and I signed off the 4-H program? Mm-hmm. Where it said 4-H trains boys and girls in the art of living, or better living. Maybe that was the truth. So I'm glad that he remembered that. You can't ever tell how far a little things like that will go. There's one thing that I would like to say in the event that there isn't a time some other time. At one time, and when I came to the state, we had 4 different programs in 4-H. One for the Indians in Robertson County, one for the Cherokee tribe in western North Carolina, one for the black people, or the Negroes as we call them, and one for the white. And in most cases, there was one for Negro boys, Negro girls, Indian boys, Indian girls, Indian boys, Indian girls, white boys, and white girls. And now that's all been brought into one program. But that's a matter of history. It isn't written out anywhere, but I was here when they had 6 restrooms in Robeson County in the courthouse. One.
And so now those 8 programs have become one.
Well, absolutely.
And I think that goes back to the way Margaret stated it a while ago, which is very well put, the fact that we have come to the fact that there's just whatever the interest is, that seems to be the one project that everybody can enter.
Well, one thing Margaret said a while ago gives me this thought that I'd like for all of us to remember as we go forward in 4-H. Regardless of what we do in 4-H, let's not forget to acquaint the girl with the fact that she is a girl, and that she has a place in the world all of her own, and that the boy, when he grows into a man, he will have a similar position. That doesn't mean now that there's any difference between the two as far as having an opportunity. Their opportunities are as great as their imagination, whether they're a boy or whether they're a girl, as great as their imagination and their will to do.
I think that's a good point to conclude this portion on, Mr. Harrell. I join with you, I'm sure, in thanking Mary Emma Butts, Margaret Clark, Lyman Dixon, Barry Miller, Cornelia Graham, Merle Swisegood, and Bob Hilton for sitting in on this particular recording session. And, of course, as always, the star of the show, Mr. L.R. Harrell.
And don't forget Professor Clark. He's been here all the time with us.
You better believe it. You know, why haven't we had Jim on the air?
We're going to get him later. Okay. He's going to sum it all up.
Okay. He's going to check our blood and turn.
There he is.
Were you in the hall when you heard that? you got that, and you're going to be on.
Wally, may I make a comment? I wanted to find time to say this. Come here, James. That came to my desk one day, a few years ago, a list of participants in the district demonstration day. This was from the Warren County area, and there was an entomology demonstration to be given. James Clark and someone, I have a brother named James. I said, come district day, I'll find that boy. And I found this young man, and I have watched with great interest as he came through our state and national entomology project winner, then as he came on through and went over yonder to school and then came here, and here he is with us. That's one thing I wanted to bring out, that I find myself as a retired person. This is it. 4-H, you can't get 4-H out of me. I picked up the Bladen Journal the other day. You know I'm from Bladen County by now. And it had a picture of all the doctors. There was Bruce Phillips from Lenore County, a doctor. I mentioned it to my brother James and his wife, and his wife said, he is my mother and father's physician.
And his wife is an outstanding 4-H from Vance County. Nancy Crocker.
Nancy, that's right.
Hey, start another
tape. At 4-H, I did want to get this one sentence in, that as I worked in extension, to me, it did, I think, more for me than it did for the people with whom I worked.
Well, that's
and
true
be it awesome. Sunday school, be it on a witness committee, whatever it is, I just find it. Walking out of church Sunday, I spoke to this young lady who is just married into our Westminster church. I spoke to her, and she, when I shook her hand, she called me by my name. She said, I'm a 4-H member. You don't remember, from Duplin County. And all the way through, 4-H is alive, Mr. Harris.
Oh, yes. They
somewhere
come
on a tape, Wally, they say it. 4-H is alive.
They come up to me and say, and they'll be saying, I was a 4-H member. I want you to meet my a daughter who was a 4-H member and her little girl who was a 4-H member. That's happened.
We do thank you, Jane.
Well, I'm enjoying.
And Wally, I continue. I miss you on the farm, Al.
Oh,
but I miss.
I miss you.
We're going to sort of see if we can't get him back.
But you know, I like to.
If I was on the farm, I couldn't be here.
But I liked you, the way you broadcast the games.
Well, I don't enjoy have a that, and it's sort of the diversion.
How'd you get along Saturday?
Loved it.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
I'll take